listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
There cannot be true change, real, lasting transformation without deep work. So says my guest today, Richard Moss. He's given his life over to teaching people how to delve deeply into their inner core so they can achieve a life of radical aliveness, unconditional love, and real inner peace. Find out today how you can do deep work with yourself. I'm Eileen Dillon, creator and host of Full Power Living, welcoming you to the only show on international media that regularly works to transform our world by exploring the power and importance of human emotions. Please join our conversation today. You can do this two ways, through our chats on emotionalpro.com or blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living, and you can also call us toll-free, 888-498-0570, 888-498-0570. Dr. Richard Moss is the maestro of deep work. That's a program that guides people to go deeply into their inner core so that they can get to this radical aliveness and unconditional love and real inner peace. His method inspires life-changing transformations that lead you to be harmonious inside of yourself, within your relationships, and in the world. He's an internationally respected leader and visionary thinker in the field of personal transformation, self-healing, group energy dynamics, and the art of living conscious relationships as an evolutionary spiritual path. Many of the things we've talked about for quite a while here on Full Power Living. So he's been working for 37 years, guiding tens of thousands of people from many religious and cultural backgrounds to make these changes so that they further their health and their spiritual development and develop meaningful relationships. His work is comprehensive, highly experiential, and it bridges science, depth psychology, dream interpretation, energy medicine, body awareness exercises, and mindfulness practices. We'll ask him what happened in 1977 that brought him into doing this work. He was formerly an avid rock climber and mountaineer, and he withdrew from intense inner challenges and started looking inward until he came up with the idea of what it is that gets in the way of people's developing their own aliveness. I'm going to ask him about this in just a minute. He's the author of 7 books on the transformational process and the art of conscious living. In the 2 most recent international best-selling books, Inside Out Healing, which we're talking about today, and The Mandala of Being. Dr. Richard Moss, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you, Eileen. I'm very happy to be with you.
So let's start with you telling us what happened in 1977 that brought you to this work, because at that time you were working as an ER doc, right?
And exactly, an ER doc, and as we talked about before the show, I knew and respected your husband, who was a neurosurgeon.
And
what happened is, it's sort of strange to talk about it, because at the time I was just living it, and so I would call it spiritual puberty. I mean, I would call it, puberty changes our bodies radically. So what would change your consciousness as radically as puberty changes your body? Some people call it cosmic consciousness. Some people call it fundamental realization, spontaneous awakening. That's what happened. And it happened over a period of months. And then integration has been going on ever since. It was a dark time in my life in a funny way. It was almost as if something was telling me something was coming. A dark time in the sense that I didn't really find much joy or satisfaction in me and what I was living. And then it just was this tremendous, in the East they would call it the awakening of the Kundalini energy. It sounds pretty bizarre to talk about. Certainly at the time I was able to say to myself, well, I'm not psychotic. I don't think this is a brain tumor that can do this. I don't think this is an adrenal tumor that can do this. So what in the world is this? And I realized that I didn't know, and I realized very quickly because suddenly everything I opened that was of a spiritual nature made complete sense to me. And I read Walt Whitman, and I could flow with his mind so deeply. And he is an extraordinary example of an exceptional mind. And it wasn't just him, it was many things. And suddenly I could feel energy and practically read people's minds and sense the interconnectedness of everyone and everything. The pinnacle of the experience was to literally experience oneness, where my sense of self disappeared as an individual, and perception and thought, and well, there weren't really any thoughts, it was just perception and awareness and the world were all one thing, and that one thing had a quality to it that is almost an inexplicable, inexpressible richness of love and rightness and harmony. I recently read the Near-Death Experience, Proof of Heaven is the name of the book, and I wouldn't call it a proof of heaven, but by a neurosurgeon, a neuroscientist, Harvard-trained, who went in a coma for 7 days. His description of what he experienced is very similar to what I experienced, except not such vivid imagery. It was just a sense that there is an intelligence in everything, and that intelligence is almost blocked from us by our, you know, the way we develop our own egos and the way we use language and the way we objectify the world is out there. And so for a little while, that all disappeared from me. And then afterwards, I wasn't the same man, and I knew I couldn't stay where I was. And so I took about a year of retreat. As you mentioned, I had been, whenever I could get free, when I wasn't working, I was doing rock climbing. Eventually in 75, I went to Peru on a mountaineering expedition. And I, instead of being that active outwardly, I just started being a deep observer of myself and reading whatever spontaneously came to me. And so I, in 77, I began the first, or 78, the first of my retreats with people. And I've never stopped.
Well, now you're pointing to something that I was thinking about. We human beings face this dilemma that I think is really challenging to navigate. We come to the earth, most of us enter an individual body, and in order to survive here on the earth, we have to identify with our body and develop a sense of self. But as we develop our sense of self, which we often call our ego, we also learn to make judgments, and we learn to hold beliefs that may or may not be truth, and we also become separate and forget our true nature. And as you point out, once we do that, we have the potential of suffering. And I think right now there is a huge opening. I know you've been working on this many years, but that allows us to get to this opening now, that a person can get past those judgments and beliefs and get back to who they really are. That, to me, is the essence of what you're talking about in Inside Out Healing. Is that true? Do you agree with that? Yeah?
Well, yes. I think, you know, I wrote a book earlier than the Mandala of Being, an Inside Out Healing, called The Second Miracle. I said the first miracle is to move from an undifferentiated state of consciousness as an infant and develop the ability to differentiate yourself from the world around you. And in other words, to develop a separate sense of self, which then uses symbols and it uses language and it operates that way. But the second miracle is when you wake up or you realize that actually consciousness or awareness is actually primary and fundamental. And if you say, I'm an aware being, that's a very true statement. The thing is that it's not an identity. It's not a separate self. So when awareness awakens, not awareness as a separate self, which is always about self-interest, self-protection, it also may be about generosity and giving and other, you know, let's say positive virtues of human nature, human potential. But this deeper sense that if we look out at our world now at over 7 billion people, some of them are still truly, the vast majority, probably 99%, live at the level of ego, which means they believe the separate self that, you know, all of us say when we say me or I, we believe that that is all we are. And then some of us on top of that have belief systems that we're also spiritual beings, and we believe in God, or we believe in an afterlife and things like that. But the actual use of your awareness as the instrument of setting yourself free from the suffering created by believing your own thoughts and the suffering created by being afraid to embrace threatening feelings, being unable to know how in a creative and healthy way to make yourself big enough to hold fear in all of its guises. And if you can't do that, then you live your life somewhat consciously, but mostly unconsciously, chasing what you think will give you happiness, but more importantly, or just as importantly, trying to avoid fear. And so most people, that's not a conscious life. A plant turns toward the light. An amoeba swims away from water that gets too hot or too acidic. Human beings that simply pursue some form of safety or pleasure and avoid unhappy feelings aren't yet conscious human beings, even though they can go to Harvard or any other major institution, even though they can do what I did, which is go to graduate school, become a doctor, and practice medicine. Still, you're not awake until you can say, you know, to yourself, who is the person that's talking now? Who is the person that's listening? What is that aspect of us that's actually hearing this conversation? What is the aspect of you that is aware of your feelings and, but therefore, in a certain sense, can be in a relationship to your feelings? What is that aspect of us that can be aware of our thoughts but not identified with our thoughts, so we can challenge them, so that our beliefs become useful as temporary ways of relating to the world until we find that better ways, or we find that our particular way is harmful to us or harmful to others, and we choose to change. But basically, that's where we're at in evolution right now. We need a kind of spirituality not based in religion, because religions have deep richness in them, but they also divide us. We need something universal, and that's what I've tried to accomplish in Inside Out Healing and in the Mandala of Being and in all of my work, an approach to ourselves that is universal, that starts where? Starts right now in the present moment. And then I can say, in this moment, if I'm deeply in the present moment, there's no thought. There's just awareness and sensation and perception and maybe subtle levels of perception that we could call paranormal levels of perception plus ordinary perception. But the surfer on a surfboard who's really good at what they do is not thinking, they're just aware. And the skier is not thinking, they're just aware when they're in flow. And the writer, when flow takes over, is aware but not controlling the flow of the words. So is with the poet or the dancer. So all of us know a place where we function at an extraordinarily high level, but we're not being driven by thinking. And of course, thinking has a proper place, as in the development of the capacity to be a fine doctor and apply knowledge in that way, or an engineer, or in any other application of information. But in order to know ourselves, we can't think. We have to really, in the present moment, be deeply connected, and we have to teach ourselves that. Sometimes we fall into it, as I did 37 years ago, and as I continue to do, or as all athletes do, or people in that flow. But most of the time, once you've found it that way, if you want to know that in your life, in every aspect of your life, then you have to have a practice like I express in the Mandala of Being and in Inside Out Healing.
Mm-hmm. And that, I think, let me just say that as a person who's worked as a psychotherapist for 41 years myself, the thing that I really like about your Mandala of Being is how simple and straightforward it is. What you've done there is to allow a simple, deliberate practice that people can do so that they have immediately the experience of what you've just been talking about.
Exactly. if we give people an image that are listening, the word mandala is a Sanskrit word that means circle, and many people are familiar with mandalas as forms of artwork, and particularly Eastern artwork that has a. And these pieces of artwork are actually images that try to convey the nature of the evolution of consciousness. So sometimes at the center of these artistic mandalas, you'll see a Buddha figure. But basically, a mandala is a circle, and like a flower, like a sunflower, a daisy, it's very strongly oriented toward the center, and yet it also pulls you toward the periphery. And in the mandala of being, the four basic ways you're pulled toward the periphery is when the mind is taken into the past, which it reimagines over and over and over again in the present moment. The actual ability to actually remember the past, especially emotionally charged experiences in the past, depends on almost the mood you're in when you reimagine the past. So it's the way we imagine the past, either in a positive or negative kind of reminiscence, and then what that does to us right now in the present moment, or it's the way we anticipate the future. So a positive anticipation, which makes us hopeful and eager, or a negative anticipation, which makes us anxious and worried. If you visualize it, you could say the future is at 12 o'clock. The center of the clock is the word awareness, or the word now, present moment awareness. 6 o'clock, you have the past. And so that 6 to 12 line that goes right through the center is the continuum of time. And then perpendicular to that, on a clock, it would be, 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock. Is let's say at 9 o'clock, you'd put all of the kinds of thoughts or judgments you have about yourself. Again, they will either make you feel bigger or smaller, because it's impossible to actually say something accurate about yourself. Though when Abraham Lincoln was asked to say something about who he was, he said, "Well, just slightly under 6'4", around 180 pounds, dark hair, craggy features," and he said nothing about who he was in a non-objective way. It's a wonderful quote of his. Literally, when someone asked him who he was, he was the president of the United States, he basically said what I just described, what we would call objective fact. And he let his actions and his words and everything else speak for him, for who he was. But in terms of someone asking him who he was, just objective fact. But most of us will say, "I'm a happy man," or "an unhappy man," or "I'm smarter," or "I'm more loyal," or "I'm not as good as you." And every one of those thoughts about ourselves, in the instant we think them, pollute us, either by making us inflated and grandiose and then therefore behaving in a superior way, or making us kind of deflated and depressive and unhappy. And then finally, if you go from 9 o'clock across to 3 o'clock, now we're looking at all the thoughts we have and beliefs we have about everybody else and everything else. So the mandala basically says, when you leave the present moment, when you leave deep awareness, natural, unconditioned awareness, you go into a kind of a world of thought. And there's only four kinds of thoughts, past and future, or judgments of yourself and judgments of everything else. And so if you realize that you're making a judgment of yourself, you go, "Wait a minute, this is just a thought that in this moment is making me feel superior. I'm going to start all over right in this moment. What's actually happening now? And I'm going to feel my breath, feel my body, see what's coming through the window, the light, what's outside that I can perceive, sensations in me," and so forth. And if it was a Harry Potter universe, the compass would keep waking you up. It would say, "Oh, now you're too far in the future and you're scaring yourself silly that you won't have enough money for your old age." Or it would go, "Whoop, wake up, you're in the past and you're blaming your parents for why you think you're having trouble with relationships now." And actually those beliefs about the past don't actually help us live in the present, and so on. So that's how the model works, and it is incredibly simple, but then you have to practice it so that you start landing right here in this moment, and suddenly you're bathed in this kind of living presence that is this deep life force that is in all of us, And it is incredibly nourishing, constantly nourishing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I didn't mention, I withheld that fact. It's simple in design and challenging in practice, which I think is another really important aspect of what you're offering, which is you're not just talking about, you're offering the experience of. Now, actually, we need to take a break right now. When we come back, I want to have you talk with us, Richard, about why it is, what gets in our way to know that we're in those various places and not in our fullness of being. You're listening to Full Power Living. My guest today is the maestro of deep work, Dr. Richard Moss, author of Inside Out Healing. You're listening to Full Power Living, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
I'm Eileen Dillon, sharing with you that it's now possible to get the answers you need for parenting your child directly from that field of infinite possibilities that Deepak Chopra has talked about for years. Times really are changing. All parents can now access higher intelligence, allowing us to parent in cooperation with divine intelligence. Find out how. Join me November 9th and 10th in San Francisco when Accessing Universal Intelligence co-founders Daniel and Sonia Rechnitzer present Profound Parenting, Success Beyond Belief. Use my name, I-L-E-N-E, Eileen, for a deep discount in the price. You can now parent profoundly and consciously. Go to accessingui.com now for information and registration for Profound Parenting. That's accessingui.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. Don't forget, I invite you to talk with us on our chats at emotionalpro.com or blogtalkradio.com/FPL. We also have a toll-free number, 888-498-0570, which I'll put on the chat. And you also can subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. Now, next week, we're going to continue the exploration of conscious living when I talk with David Christopher, who's written a book called The Holy Universe. It's about the ways in which our story of the universe is changing. He says, the story of the universe is a young story. It's changing as we discover and rediscover more about ourselves, our planet, our galaxy, and our universe. I think this story belongs to you and me, so come explore this with me and David Christopher. Today, my guest is Dr. Richard Moss, who got his Bachelor of Arts from the State University of New York at Stony Brook and his MD degree from New York Medical College in 1972. And before retiring from the practice of medicine, he was a member of the American College of Emergency Medicine, the American College of Preventive Medicine, and the American Holistic Medical Association. He's author of 7 books, including the one we're discussing today, a bestseller called Inside Out Healing. And a little bit later, we'll get him to talk about his workshops that he's offering. In the meantime, before we had our break, Richard, I ask you to address the question for us. Why do we go into past, future messages about others and messages about ourselves instead of staying in awareness? Are we just not knowledgeable about it? Are there inbred genetic patterns of going to negativity? What do you say? Why do we go there?
Well, if I was going to take the risk of trying to be an evolutionary biologist, I would say the developmental process that takes us into what we call ego, which is where we start making the statement, me or I and mine, me and mine, you and yours, and being able to learn from the past and anticipate the future, that has enormous survival value. If you compare us to, I mean, there are animals that are incredibly well adapted to survive, like rodents. And of course, the most extraordinary survivors are bacteria and maybe viruses, which are the great information exchangers that push evolution on our planet. But for a human being, to be able to anticipate the future and plan for it, learn from mistakes from the past and so forth, and to be able to evaluate oneself and one's own behavior, and to be able to make judgments, which hopefully in the best of situations are really perceptions about our world and other people and situations, this has enormous survival value. The problem is that today, well, because it has survival value, of course, we've been doing it. We've been doing it for however long human beings have been here, thinking human beings, and I don't really know how long that is, maybe a million years. Hard to know. We're finding tools and things like that earlier and earlier. But if you do something a lot, you become an expert at it. So by the age of 6, most developmental psychologists will say that the ego, or the sense of me or I, is very well established. And the kind of undifferentiated state that a young infant would experience that would bring them into oneness with the world, but without the ability to know themselves and interact, that's long gone. Yet even so, 6 years old, 7 years old, 8 years old, children have an extraordinary ability to have sort of, let's say, spiritual perception. And then the brain dumps the cells it doesn't need, and we really stay in ego. And by the time every few years goes by, we've had another 10,000 hours of practice identifying with our stories about ourselves and others, identifying with our beliefs about the past and our beliefs about how we anticipate the future. So we are actually experts by that definition. Let's say to become an expert in piano playing or violin, you need at least 10,000 hours of practice, the research suggests. Same thing with sports. But what we don't realize is that we're all experts at believing our stories, and we're all experts at defending ourselves psychologically and emotionally from threatening feelings. And therefore, that is where we are developmentally. But today, we don't have to be afraid of saber-toothed tigers, and we don't have to be afraid too much of what nature will do to us other than the forms of infectious disease and things like that. What we have to be afraid of is our own thinking, the belief systems we assemble, and how those belief systems both attack us at the moment you think a judgment, you are in fact poisoning yourself, but also when collective groups of people, tribes and nations and religious groups, unify around a certain belief system and then polarize against others in different belief systems, that's where the greatest danger is to us today. So in fact, for our survival, we have to wake up out of this ancient, previously survival advantage of being able to identify with past, future, and stories of ourselves and others. We have to wake up out of that and start to really discover this much deeper intelligence and this place of infinite potential, infinite creativity, which is when we become very, very present, very in our bodies, and start to access this, well, for want of a better word, let's call it universal intelligence. So the problem is, today, for survival, we need to learn to be far more adapted to the present moment. The psychologist and psychological theoretician and psychiatrist Carl Jung said very clearly, adult human beings are poorly adapted to the now, poorly adapted to the present moment. We just don't live in the present moment. And unfortunately, that means we live in a mind-made world. And what we make with our mind is much more dangerous to us. It can be wonderful, but it can be very dangerous to us than the actual world we live in. The actual world we live in is far, far more generous, far, far safer than the mental world most of us live in.
Hmm. That's really interesting. That's a profound thing. I'm still kind of swallowing it, that we live in a mind-made world. I had an incident recently where someone close to me was worrying, and fretful and concerned about the future. And for once, instead of getting in there with them, I said, gosh, that's unfortunate. It sounds like you've gone into the future and you're driving yourself crazy with it. And I walked away. And the net result was that the other person brought themselves more into the present and started getting creative about what to do about the concerns. And that's where we're going, right? We have this incredible ability to create ourselves and our experiences. And as I read your book, that's what you're talking about. You get in the now, and then you're infinitely creative. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, what you did was wonderful. By just pointing them toward what their mind was doing, they shifted. The person shifted. And that's what all my work is about. I say to people, go home and write this and put it on your refrigerator, put it on your bathroom mirror, and the words are, who I am, who I really am, begins right now. So what that means is, right now I'm aware, for example, that I have a thought about the future, which is making me really anxious. So I say to myself, thank you, awareness. I'm so grateful. You've just made me aware that I am thinking a thought about the future, and that thought is making me anxious. And I would rather live in this moment than in this moment poisoned by those future thoughts. Okay? So when someone looks at the mandala, they see the word now in the center, and they see future at 12 o'clock and past at 6 o'clock and stories about me at 9 o'clock and stories about you at 3 o'clock. And if I say to someone, how many nows do you see? They say one. But actually what that mandala shows is that there's actually five nows. Uh-huh. It's always now. The body never leaves now. But sometimes it's a now of when you're making love, you forget yourself, you flow into each other, you flow into life. It's a now not conditioned by thought, and you're deeply in your body. And the same thing through athletics. Or when, you know, dancing and poetry writing, as I talked about earlier. Or they're in these four other nows, the now that's created by the me stories and the judgments of yourself, the you stories, the judgments of other religions, your situation, your body, other people, the past stories, and the future stories. So if you start all over in this moment and you make that the practice, who I am begins now. One part of the practice is you just keep coming back and starting now. And in that moment, you'll see, oh, that's just a thought about the future that made me scared. Who I am begins now, but not only that, if I'm really feeling good in myself right now, the actions I will take are going to likely create a future in which I feel good about myself. So don't ever make a decision about the future when you're anxious. Don't ever make a decision about the future when you're scared. And be very, very careful about making decisions about the future when you feel eager or excited or hopeful. The reason that the financial bubbles get so big is because people tell themselves stories about the future that make them hopeful in a very false way. And the reason that when the financial bubbles break, we go so far down is because then they tell themselves stories that are fearful. And they keep telling themselves stories that are fearful long past the actual situation warranting fearful thoughts. But we do that every day in our houses. We do that every day in our relationships. So who I am begins now. Who I will be begins now. Who I was begins now.
That's lovely. Okay. Let me take you to a practical thing. Let's say I'm a person, I've lost my job, my savings are fast running out, my unemployment payments don't cover my mortgage, and I have four mouths to feed. I'm going to be in a panic. I'm going to say I did something wrong in the past that got me in this situation. How would you help me get myself out of that emotional morass?
Well, first of all, it is an emotional morass. It's not the situation. It's what you're telling yourself about the situation. Okay, so the money is short. Does that mean you can't love your children? Does that mean you can't love your spouse? No. The money is short. Does that mean you can't pick a few flowers or a very inexpensive group of flowers and put them in your living room and feel the joy that flowers radiate. No, you can do that. So really what I would say in a practical way is, if you've had a lifetime habit of believing your stories, you are going to be caught in an emotional morass. You will not know how to free yourself. So go immediately to my website, and I'm not trying to be self-serving, and go to the free e-course that's about the mandala of being, which teaches you how to stop the stories, recognize the stories, and live in the now. It's completely free, and take the first five parts of the course, and then go to the second part, the eight-part series, again, completely free, which is going to help you even more. And then go to my YouTube channel and watch me show in 5 and 7 minute YouTubes how you can center yourself at the moments of absolute desperate thinking. Now, obviously, I'm not the only one that has this kind of information out in the world. It's just each of us puts it out in different ways. For whatever, less than $10 on Amazon, the book Inside Out Healing can be purchased. And that book, I mean, Eckhart Tolle's book, Power of Now, is a wonderful, wonderful book. And yet, Inside Out Healing will show you how to do what he's talking about in a very practical way, thought by thought, feeling by feeling, story by story, with lots of case histories. So that's what I would say to a person. You've got to start learning to live in the now. About 6 months ago, a combination of carrying very heavy bags and that did one of my discs and damaged my back, but I was still functional. I could actually still ski, but then I went for a 30-mile bike ride. And a week later, I could not stand or move without pain, which became very severe hip pain. Now, the last 5 months, I'm still working a lot, so I haven't had time. I've had enough time to have MRIs and find out what's wrong with me, and I know what I'm going to have to do, but I've been wheelchaired around every airport. I'm on crutches some of the time. If it's very short distances, let's say less than 200 feet, I walk okay. If I walk 200 feet, you know, rest and do that 7 or 8 times a day, that night and the next day, I hurt in my right hip. The point is, it never had a, you know, out of my practice, I never said, I can't walk in the mountains. I can't go out in my garden. I can't be in nature the way I love. And I was a person who was always very physically active, and to suddenly be cut off completely from any form of aerobic exercise except swimming, which isn't so easy to do, though recently I joined the hot springs pool and I've been able to get some aerobic exercise swimming. The point is, you could say to yourself, oh, my life isn't the same. And you'd make yourself miserable. What I found is, hey, I just learned that I'm not dependent on exercise to feel wonderful. I'm not dependent on being able to walk in nature to feel wonderful. That riding in a wheelchair, I can rejoice at every perception, the waddling of some people, the striding of others, the completely, there are people in the airports have no idea that anyone is anywhere near them, and they could be run over in a second. The wheelchair guys where people are always going, excuse me, wheelchair coming through, you know, and people just, and I watch all of this with absolute fascination, as I do with everything, all day long, everywhere, anywhere, and my life has had changes, too. I made a very important decision 3 years ago to leave a marriage that was just for years really deeply unhappy for me, and I don't think for her either. And I gave up almost everything I had financially so I wouldn't have to pay long, long spousal support. As a result, suddenly my financial situation was down to an eighth of what it had previously been, and it hasn't made a bit of difference. Not one iota. I love the simplicity of my life now, my little townhouse. I just love it. There's no reason I needed any of those things I had before. I don't mind that my car has lots of miles on it and seems to be working just fine. So in practical terms, it's not the situation. It's the story you tell yourself. It's not aging. It's the story you tell yourself about aging. It's not the divorce. It's the stories you tell yourself about the divorce. And divorce is a painful thing, very painful. And the financial struggle that we went through, which I would have hoped we could have not done, we did do. And the lawyers got a lot of money, even though I didn't want to fight. And so what? Without stories, it is stressful in certain moments. It's tiring. I did have stories that it's a waste of... I said to myself, it's a waste the lawyers get all this money, but that made me unhappy, so I stopped that. And when I make my monthly payment now, which fortunately is only... I'm halfway through the 3 years instead of having to do that for the rest of my life, I don't have a single bit of resentment. But I've been practicing what I'm talking about now very consciously and conscientiously for at least 25 years. Even though I woke up earlier than that, I hadn't really grokked fully what the practice is that really is life-transforming, which is learning who I am begins now, who I was begins now, who I will be begins now. And that means step back from any thought that makes your body contract, your energy contract, your emotions contract. Step away from the thought. If it does that to you, it is not true. The body is in alignment with the whole universe, and it knows truth. And even though perceptions can sometimes be harsh ones, like there's only this much money in the bank account, and it's not very much, and how am I going to pay the bills next month? If you've been living the practice I'm talking about, you will have long before simplified your life to the point that you can live with what you have and release every other story that hurts you. If you haven't, you have to start now. And that's why I said, go to the website, do the free e-course, read this book, give it some thought, try the practice, work at it, and change your life. And I have worked with people about issues with their parents, and in 2 hours, they've been able to come to such deep connection to themselves that some of them have said to me, you know, 15 years of psychotherapy and so many channels and clairvoyance telling me this and that. And we've done that. We've done something that clears me more in a few hours, because the work isn't conceptual alone. It's every time you have a thought, you look at what that thought does to you in your body, and you look at how it affects your sense of relationship to life in the moment, how open you are to connection with others, how open you are to being touched by life, and how readily you can reach out and give yourself to life. Life is a broad generalization, but I mean people, I mean situations. It's amazing to know that at the end of being wheeled in the wheelchair, those people are so happy. They're talking to me about their lives. It just sort of pours out of them. It just seems to happen because I'm gracious, my heart is open, I'm rejoicing in the moment. They're wheeling me along, and then they tell me about how nasty some people can be and how much... And it's not... I don't want to do this. I stopped doing this, and in the most difficult places of life, which have to do with physical pain, hurt, and emotional dynamics in the couple, I taught myself to stop having stories about my ex that hurt me. I have nothing but love for her and prayers for her well-being. And for my stepchildren, two of whom don't want to talk to me and have cut me off from the grandchildren, and one who I'm very close with, I have no stories about what they've done, no judgments. They're living what they believe is right for them. And I just hold them in my heart. And with my partner, Annalisa, who I've known for 27 years and worked with the last 13 years, we sit down every day and have a conversation about anything and everything, anything that might be blocking our connection, anything that might be distorting our perceptions of each other, anything we want to brainstorm that we want to create together, you know, that's part of our practice. And it just produces deeper and deeper intimacy. Mm. And so, you know, you don't have to have much. If you just have the connection with other people, with your body, with your sensations, your perceptions, and you're not living in mind-made suffering, life is extraordinarily beautiful.
Wow. If all of us bought into, believed, followed what you've just been talking about, we'd put a lot of big businesses out of business, I think, because there wouldn't be a huge need. I've noticed in myself, Richard, over the last probably 10 to 15 years, It showed up in a strange way. I started really disliking shopping. Not that I ever liked it that much, but I didn't like it. And I've come down to about the only thing that I buy these days is gasoline and food, because I just don't have a desire. I relate to what you're talking about. It's like I'm happy with what I've got. I've got a 1998 Honda. I'm happy with what I have. It's running. It gets me where I need to go. And I don't need more than that. And it is a freeing feeling. I love the way you're describing that.
It is a freeing feeling. Safety, we're never going to be able to, not technology, not medical advances, not anything. Nothing's going to make us safe. If inside ourselves we tell ourselves stories that scare us, and if we haven't learned that fear is a sensation, it's a sensation of different orders of magnitude. It has thousands of names: fear of failure, fear of abandonment, fear of heights, fear of spiders, fear of snakes, fear of fire, fear of drowning, endlessly, you know. But it's only one, in the present moment, it's only one sensation. And my awareness is so big that every concept about the universe is inside my awareness. Now, every concept that every human being ever had that I can be made aware of by reading Einstein, by reading Stephen Hawking, and so forth, that's also inside my awareness. God is inside my awareness. I don't know if God exists or not. I don't have to worry about that. All I have to worry about is the God I invent. That's inside my awareness. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have a problem. I believe in a God that forgives people for not believing in God. Therefore, whether there's a God or not is not an issue. But when you create a belief, and that belief is going to affect you physically, and it's going to affect your behavior. So be very, very careful what you choose to believe. And if you simplify your life in the way we're talking about, what starts to happen is, instead of being filled by beliefs, or instead of being filled by things, you're filled by a current, a living current, a life force. And when it is not, when you're not aroused over and over again all day long by thoughts that make you scared or resentful or bitter or guilty or anxious or terrified, then gradually what's there is this living current, and it is literally, people feel it. It radiates from us. It radiates through our voices. And that, it nourishes us, it nourishes everyone around us, and in that way we are our brother's keeper. If we use a scriptural expression, the depth to which we rest in this non-distorted present moment awareness, non-polluted state of relationship to ourselves and life, radiates to others, and it diminishes fear in everyone. And it increases the capacity for people to have a healthy relationship with scary feelings or threatening feelings in everyone. And people get next to me and they want to talk to me about their problems. And sometimes they sit down and they go, but my mind just went blank.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah, well, if your mind went blank, what's there? And I said, just start enjoying your body. And pretty soon we could just sit in silence, of course. That's not necessarily going to help them when they leave, so we do get to work on what's going on in their lives. Mm-hmm. But the fact that the human energy field radiates from every person in accordance to the depth of how much you are embodied in the present moment, not in accordance with what you believe, only in accordance with whether what you believe has silenced your thoughts and opened your heart. And for me, that's what God is about. God is a thought that stops all thought. God is the final thing you can't think about. So if you contemplate God, your mind has to just go into I don't know, I can't know. And then if you decide that that God is a loving God, then not only that, though I don't know, but it's completely safe to not know. And that love comes through us, which is actually the creation of our own beliefs. Uh-huh. Up to a certain point, and then the rest of it seems to be some mystery, because I do think there's a world of spirit, or at least a world that's beyond what we can know at any given time,
Right.
And sometimes comes to live in us.
Right. I was going to share with you, I was a member of a spiritualist church some years ago, and they offered a statement that God is ever equal to your understanding, which I love.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
Yes, and that's what you were describing. Oh, my gosh. I really relate to what you're talking about. And I want to emphasize that in your writing and the things that are on your website, richardmoss.com, and in Inside Out Healing, there are practical, in-the-moment, almost immediate ways that people can do this for themselves and get to this place. And at least in my experience, I'm hoping, I'm expecting, actually, that you'll agree with me, the more you practice doing it, the easier it becomes, the more part of you it becomes, or the more you become a part of it.
You know, there's that funny, that wonderful joke about two tourists in New York City, and they come upon an old gentleman who's walking along, and it turns out they don't know who he is. Well, let's just say it's Itzhak Perlman, and who's not that old right now. But they say to him, "How do we get to Carnegie Hall?" And he says, "Practice, practice, practice."
That's great.
So one of the things that people have to understand is, you've been practicing believing your judgments of your mother and father. Stop. You've been practicing believing your judgments of yourself. Stop. You've been practicing imagining a future that can scare you silly, or one that makes you think that getting to that future is what's going to save you or make you happy. Stop. The happiest you'll ever be is right now, as soon as you stop thinking. Now, right time, place, way to use your thinking. You know, when your husband was, before he retired from neurosurgery, I'm glad he studied and read and perfected everything he could about the art and science of that particular aspect of medicine. That's a right use of thinking. So let's not get me wrong. You want to build a bridge that's going to last 100 years? Think about it. You know, you want new materials that'll endure. You want high efficiency machines and highest, you know, sustainable economy, sustainability. We need to think. But what we're talking about, you and I, is emotional reality. Emotions are created by thoughts. Feelings are natural modes, part of a mode of consciousness. Feeling will never hurt you if you make a space for it, and most feelings can make you, or can be so generous. But thinking, plus, you know, the body, leads to emotional arousal, and often that's bitterness and resentment and fear and anger and jealousy, and that's such a terrible thing to do to ourselves. And we can stop if we want to, and it's a practice. It doesn't make a bit of difference what the other person did. All that matters is what you tell yourself about what the other person did. And that's where we all have power, gigantic power. But first you have to understand it, and then you have to practice. And if you practice the things that are in my book, or I'm sure in your work and in the work you celebrate with your other guests, you will change your life. In a matter of a month, you'll notice something profound is beginning to change. In a year, you'll hardly recognize yourself. In 5 years, you'll not even know that man or woman you were before. Mm-hmm. And your life will be so good, and it won't matter how much money you have, and it won't matter if you're in a wheelchair. It truly won't matter. Your life will be so good. I mean, I suppose once we lose our minds, then we... Who knows what goes on there? But
I think that's another show.
That's another show, exactly.
That's a beautiful summary. I just want to share with you some of what we've got on our chat. The message in Richard's troubles led to new perceptions and possibilities, as is true for all of us. His message is one of new stories as individuals, as well as new stories about our human capacities and who we really are. Infinite. I thought you'd like to hear that.
That's beautiful.
So
it's truly beautiful. We are, you know, we are that aspect of nature inventing itself. And not only that, we are that aspect of nature falling in love with itself. Thomas Berry said we are that aspect of nature becoming aware of itself. But if you do become aware of yourself, then fall in love with yourself and invent yourself. You know, that's who everyone we admire has done. They invented themselves. They weren't born that way. St. Francis wasn't born St. Francis, and I doubt Jesus was born Jesus. I think these people invented themselves, as did the great doctors and jurists and
everybody. Consciousness raisers.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Well, sadly, we'll have to stop right now. You're a fantastic gift to our world, Richard. I'm really glad to get to know you, and also to realize that your own willingness to listen to your own heart, to change the direction of your life as needed, and to do deep work has actually brought a huge opportunity for the rest of us to emulate and learn how to do this for ourselves. So I want to thank you and let you know that I'm honored to have had you as my guest here on Full Power Living today.
And I'm honored too, Eileen. Thank you so much.
Join us live next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, which is noon Eastern, when David Christopher explores the holy universe with me. Especially if you call yourself spiritual but not religious, David has ways for you to reclaim the word holy. Join me for this intriguing conversation. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media has been our producer. Thank you, Paul, for your years of support and rescue of me. I appreciate it. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.